It's Idaho Matters on a Tuesday. It's June 4th. Hi, I'm George Prentice. Today, scientists at Idaho National Laboratory Space Nuclear Power and Isotope Technologies Division are preparing the nuclear energy generator that will power NASA's next Mars rover mission. It's scheduled for a July 2020 launch. And joining us today to explain how a nugget of plutonium can power an interplanetary remote control car is Dr. Stephen Johnson. He's the director of the INL division, and he's skippered the department since its inception in 2002. Welcome.
Good afternoon, George. How are you today?
I'm very, very well. We're going to nerd out for a few minutes. This is great stuff. But can you give us a little 101 here on radioisotopes? On what they are and how they make a Mars rover go?
Okay, specifically, the radioisotope that the United States has used for space missions is a special isotope of plutonium, plutonium-238, and its half-life and it's the way it gives off radiation make it uniquely qualified for space power systems. It has approximately an 88-year half-life, which means in 88 years, half of it has decayed. It gives off a fair bit of heat per gram of material, and that heat can be harnessed and converted into electrical power. And it's been used by the U.S. since the early 60s in this capacity. And, for example, the poster child for this type of power system are the Voyager 1 and 2 probes launched in 1977. Both of them have left our solar system now. And they're equipped with three radioisotope power systems, which are still functioning 40-plus years after they were launched. I mean, that's a wonderful commercial.
So the decay, again, that generates the power, as I understand it?
Yes, the decay is both via a spontaneous neutron decay, an alpha particle, and a small amount of gamma, but it gives off about 0.6 watts per gram, 0.6 watts thermal. And so the power system that's on Mars right now on the rover Curiosity has about 2,000 watts thermal, and that's harnessed by the thermoelectrics on board to produce about 110 watts electric.
Let's talk about the conditions on Mars. They're extreme, I'm guessing. How do you build to the temperature, to the lack of atmospheric pressure and solar radiation?
Yes, so the system is completely sealed. It has what I would call a one-way valve. So you've got a mixture of argon gas and helium around that central core that contains your well-packaged plutonium heat sources. And the temperature on Mars goes from about 200 degrees Kelvin to 273 Kelvin. In ordinary temperature, you would call that about 0 degrees Fahrenheit to maybe 120 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's very cold.
My goodness.
But you want the greatest temperature difference between the internal core and the external is what produces the most amount of electrical power. So having a cold environment actually helps you out.
So let's talk about the window to do this. It's our understanding that NASA has a very specific window every couple of years to make these types of launches.
Yeah, so our window opens up around July 17th and extends for 3 weeks. And you get that three-week window every 26 months. And it's pretty fixed and something that we need to be ready at that point in time, and it allows us to, one, get to the planet in about 8 months of cruising time using a Atlas 541 rocket, and it allows us to also observe the probe, the rover, going down to the surface with a one or two of the satellites that we have around Mars. So it allows you to have eyes on, and it allows you to get to the planet in the most expeditious manner.
We're talking about plutonium. How do you package plutonium in a way that it doesn't pose any threat?
Okay, so it's kind of a three-way packaging. First, you make it into a pressed oxide, which is very much like a ceramic, something that's really tough to break into small particles. That's your first step. Second step is you wrap it up into a what we call a cladding vent set, which is made out of an alloy of iridium, which has a very, very high melting point. So very resistant in any thermal accidents that might happen. And lastly, you package that into a carbon-carbon composite that's very tough, very durable. And then to make that into something that you can really have a high degree of confidence in, we've done a number of different tests. And by tests, I mean things where you actually use an impact gun and shoot them at an unyielding surface at terminal velocity, the velocity you'd have if something happened and it was coming back down to the Earth. So about 52 meters per second squared, or about 120 miles an hour.
We're speaking with Dr. Stephen Johnson. He's the director of INL Space Nuclear Power and Isotope Technologies Division, and we'd love to hear from you. You can communicate with us via email at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. On Twitter, use the hashtag IdahoMatters, or on our Facebook page, Boise State Public Radio. So getting to Mars is tough enough, but talk about getting the generator to Florida.
Yeah, so it takes, we usually schedule for about 4 months for fueling and environmental testing. Environmental testing has us putting it through a vibrational sequence like you would have on a rocket. We would do also, we'd measure the, say, the magnetic moment made by our electrical power system so that we could ensure that it didn't mess around with any of the instrumentation around it. We put it in an environmental chamber where we can simulate the vacuum it's going to see in space. And so that'll take around 4 months. And then we usually transport it down to Florida about 4 to 6 months prior to launch. For example, the last Mars launch, we got the system down there in early July of 2011, and it took off the Saturday after Thanksgiving in 2011.
So what are we talking about, later this year or early 2020?
It'll be early 2020 where we transport it down there. We've already started doing the preps. We had a huge exercise with NASA and with the Jet Propulsion Lab where we stepped through about 20 different procedures. We did that in February of this year. We were all about making absolutely positively certain all of our procedures are right, all our handoffs to our other team members are right. And so we've already gone through our Pathfinder exercise is what they call it. And we're continuing to work with them. We do a number of things that, say, for example, we're launching in July. We just completed and had approved our hurricane plan today. You have to have that if you launch between May and November. Just a number of different plans and procedures and everything. We have approximately 20 of those for the INL work down at Kennedy Space Center. I was just down there within the last month for another prep meeting. We're down there every 2 to 3 months just to make certain everything goes right when it has to.
Can I assume that you love your work? What's it like to see your work on Mars?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, we have about 60 to 70 people here in Idaho that look at that, and many more fans in Idaho Falls and at the laboratory. And we try to make certain everybody feels and enjoys that sense of accomplishment. We have other team members at Los Alamos National Lab and Oak Ridge National Lab that are part of the DOE team. And we just try to make certain everybody can feel that same sense of accomplishment, because it takes a large team of people to get the power system down there and get it ready to go down there.
And can you just take us in the room for a moment and what it's like when you've got a successful landing and the rover rolls out?
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely fantastic. If you've never seen the 7 Minutes of Terror video on the Jet Propulsion site, it's well worth it. We've watched heard the voiceovers. We've watched the control room. We normally have a party here in Idaho Falls so that we could watch that. We did that on the night of August 5th, 2012, when it came in that evening, and we could watch the satellite feed from the satellite going around Mars. And it's just such a neat feeling of accomplishment. We felt the same thing looking at the images on July 14th of 2015, when the New Horizons probe went by Pluto. We had supplied the power system for that. That was a 9.5-year cruise to get the power system to Pluto. And it's just a tremendous feeling of just a group euphoria in terms of contributing to something like that.
And can I also assume that your heart skips a beat, and you have some amount of pride when you see young boys and girls in STEM programs, and they want to do what you do?
Yes, that's another part of what we do here. Everyone from the operators out in the facility to the engineers to the quality assurance people do a lot of outreach to the public schools. We host a lot of people here where we have a small learning center with a lot of different models and things in it. And it's just it's a really neat way. I've gone into a school system where I had kindergarten through sixth grade sitting inside there, and I was like, wow, there were 200 people in the auditorium. It's
okay.
Just that's kind of a neat thing to do.
Excellent. Dr. Stephen Johnson, Director of INL Space Nuclear Power and Isotope Technologies Division, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for allowing me to speak to your audience, and have a good day.
And you can join us online. We're at BoiseStatePublicRadio.org for Idaho Matters. I'm George Prentice. Have a great day.